welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So if you're just waking up, it's 8 o'clock in the morning, a few minutes later. This is live call-in radio, the Investor Resources live radio program. So you have questions about what's in your portfolio, or you have been talking with your advisor, or just browsing the internet and wondering whether or not, should I put this in my portfolio, or should I take that one out? Well, that's a question to run by us, and let's see what we can dig up with the data that we have on the screen. The number to get into the show is 888-312-5757 to ask your question. 888-312-5757. Just pick up the phone, tell Mike what your question is. He'll put it on our screen, and we will get to you as quickly as we can interrupt our interruptible train of thought.
Which is pretty quick, yeah.
Yeah, which is pretty quick.
Doesn't That's take triple... much to derail our train, yeah. It's like...
888-312-5757. You can also send us an email, help@iriradio.com. We'll look at it at the break. Well, the market finished the week without much fanfare. It's been distracted by all the political hullabaloo. But we did start the week higher, failed to hold on. But Pfizer did help set the tone for the healthcare sector as it filed for emergency use authorization for a COVID-19 vaccine by the end of the month. That would be really early fulfillment of getting the vaccine before the end of the year. But it's still emergency use. Got a lot of testing that still needs to be done. What was interesting is that utilities did very well, yeah. And they have been. In fact, we own utilities in both of our sector-oriented portfolios, and it is kind of a conundrum to have utilities in the portfolio when you also have technology. And over the last month, the strongest sector has been technology, even though it's had a lot of volatility. And then the second strongest one has been utilities. And you see, does that make any sense?
Yeah, shouldn't happen. Utilities are defensive, and large cap growth. That's a full-on bull market. So they're both going up at the same time. And with our process, we look at it and we say, okay, that shouldn't be happening, but they're both going up, so we're going to own them.
So we know tech is there because people are interested in the growth and technology and all the advances that are going on that change our life. And why is utilities there? Well, utilities, as Perry just mentioned, is normally a defensive investment. So when people get a little anxious about risk in the market, they often reduce some portion of their equity portfolio, but they don't want to go to cash. Bonds don't pay anything anymore, so utilities have less volatility, and particularly if you are working with a manager that cannot raise a lot of cash, which is most of them, utilities is the safe haven to go to, and the fact that it's been rising means that there is demand. Remember, it's an auction market. You got a lot of people who want to buy it. The price goes up, and that's a trend. But, you know, the bottom line is every investor is a trend-following investor. The reason people go do fundamental valuation work is because they want to buy something cheap, which they believe will get them in at the beginning of a rising price trend. They're just looking for a different way to enter the trend. And sometimes it works, and then there are periods of time where it doesn't. Perry, you found one this week that you were telling me about.
Sure, there's a huge value money management firm, and they do a lot of managing for institutions, institutional pensions, state pensions, and they are closing shop. They're strictly value. They've been around for over 30 years. At their peak, they were a $31 billion firm. They're down to $10 billion now, and the founder has just said, you know, we're closing up. We're sending people their money back. We can't keep charging for this because value just isn't working, and it hasn't worked for years now, and it doesn't seem to be turning around. Everything that we track has nothing to do with what's driving this market. And so we're on the opposite side of everything. The way he put it was, it looks like everything on our sell list we're buying and everything on our buy list we're selling. We're just completely out of sync with the market to the point where they're closing up. It's just not working on value. It's not turning around, and they can't just keep charging people and saying, well, just wait forever. So that's some of the big guys with large accounts. You know, like I said, they're smaller now, but they're still $10 billion, and they're walking away right now. They're closing up and going home.
$10 billion is more than I'm I don't know how long it would take to count it if we actually had
right,
cash.
Right, but in the world of trillion-dollar issues, now all of a sudden, it's just $10 billion.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. But because of that, and you brought that to my attention, I went back and looked in one of the databases that I subscribe to compare growth versus value in the ETF world. I mean, it makes it easy for the you have an ETF that focuses on growth securities, one that focuses on value securities. And there, it's been kind of back and forth, which is a relatively normal market up until 2017. And then value just died. The money has moved to growth. And I think a lot of that has to do with QE, the quantitative easing. The money's being pumped into the marketplace by the Fed. And the big brokerage firms, which are the gateway for that money back into the economy, reluctant to lend it out, and more so today, have just pumped it back into the market, and they're in areas where they can turn the money over quickly. And other investors have just jumped in saying, well, that's where it's made. Forget about the other stuff. I won't do any research. I'm just going to do what Goldman Sachs is doing. And try to make money on their coattails,
right? And over at Berkshire Hathaway, you know, I told you also that Charlie Munger, who's Warren Buffett's right hand man, said, you know, people still are constantly circling around their firm looking for ideas, fishing for ideas, as he put it. And he said, I keep telling people, you know, you might ought to go where there's more fish, because they're essentially value investors too. And there's nothing here right now, guys. Don't look for what we're doing. This is not where you should be looking. So. Value is in a bit of a tough situation right now.
Well, and the value is not the only thing that's tough. Well, one thing that's not tough is getting in to talk to us if you have questions. I mean, the phone line is open. Mike is on the verge of taking a nap in there, so I'm going to make the phone ring. 888-312-5757. 888-312-5757. This name is probably not going to ring a bell with a lot of people. Carmen Reinhart. Now, Carmen Reinhart had a lot of press back in the post-last bear market environment, the post-great financial collapse market, when she was at Harvard and with a colleague, Kenneth Rogoff, that's another name in the financial industry that's recognizable, they wrote a book in 2009 looking at what had just happened in our economy. The book is titled, This Time is Different, 8 Centuries of Financial Folly. Well, having done that research, she has some...
That's pretty long-term look, 8 centuries. That's a...
Yeah, but financial folly just kind of repeats itself among various governments.
Over and over, it does.
But having done that research, having been a Harvard... I don't know exactly what her professorial role was there, but clearly she had status at Harvard. She is now the chief economist at the World Bank. So somebody who has a little bit of creds, you know, I mean, you got to pay attention when she quietly makes her speech. And she recently warned the world financial community that the coronavirus pandemic is turning into a major economic crisis, and warned there is an increasing possibility of a financial crisis emerging out of this. It did not start as a financial crisis, but it's morphing into a major economic crisis with very serious financial consequences. there's a long road ahead, end quote.
So it's pretty interesting that she's saying what we're experiencing right now is not a financial crisis, but there could be one looming. So this is maybe just the beginning of things to come. And, you know, we've been saying that for months, that the unintended consequences of total economic shutdown are going to come from somewhere, and we're not sure what they are. And she's kind of backing the point up, hey, this is not a good thing, and we're not sure where this is going, but there could be some very serious consequences to what's going on right now.
So she added, quote, the scenario we are in is not a sustainable one, end quote. Well, what is the bigger problem? The biggest problem here is the commonality that virtually every central bank in the world is doing the same thing, borrowing money out the wazoo.
Fast as they can. And her point was, it's not because the countries are all working together. As she puts it, this is a war. And during wars, government finance their war expenditures any way they can. And right now there's dire need. So it's like every government is out there trying to accumulate capital as fast as they can for their needs and without regard to the rest of the world. There is no unified, let's fix the world together between central banks and economists out there. Everybody's trying to make sure their ship doesn't sink first.
You know, I'm really concerned about everybody here, but frankly, I'm going to be sure I survive first.
I'm hanging out right here next to the lifeboat, and that's not an accident. Yeah, so
that's correct. Well, one of the real serious consequences here is that when you look at the poorest country, who obviously just like a somebody that you know that has a poor credit record has a hard time borrowing money, the poorest countries have ended up borrowing money from China, and China is owed almost 60% of the money that the world's poorest nations are due to repay this year. And China has never been known to be an empathetic lender when people are in trouble.
They're not exactly participating with the rest of the developed countries trying to make sure that no one on the shallow end of the pool goes under. So while they are looking at it, as she put it, they are less than fully participating at this point. So,
China's road to global dominance is a financial one. They are not going to have to go to war with maritime and military armaments. They've already planted their flag, so to speak, in many of these smaller countries. And we've watched for years, we've talked about it, as China has financed port improvements in various countries, where at some point they'll be able to tell the U.S. Navy, no, you can't anchor here. That is a real risk for us, particularly when they foreclose on all these loans. We don't know what's going to happen, but that is a remaining risk.
One more of those unknowns out there. What is known, Don, is that we're at our first break here, so we're going to have to get
already?
Out of here.
Already? How about that?
Time flies. It really does. We'd like to remind everyone that we have our November market update on the schedule. That's for Saturday, November 7th, 9:15, right after the show. And you can register for that at iriradio.com. Just go to iriradio.com, click on the webinar page, and it's very quick to register. You're going to get an email link. And on November 7th, you can just log in, give that link a click, and you'll be online with us, and you'll be able to get your questions answered. We always go through some current market conditions. We go through some education, and then we have plenty of time to answer your question if it's about anything that's bothering you, any second opinion on any securities. It's well worth your time. We're getting a very good response to that. So Saturday, November 7th, 9:15. And if you have any questions this morning, feel free to give us a call, 888-312-5757. That is 888-312-5757. We would be more than happy to talk with you. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm. Well, we need to join Inspector Clouseau and see if we can figure out what's going on. There's a lot of clues, but so far the case has not been solved.
No, not that I can tell. You are correct.
So part of the problem with the forecast that every country is doing the same thing, trying to stay alive themselves. This is basically financial war. This is not a war that we've seen before. We are prepared for military war, but we don't think of being at war with the entire globe trying to borrow money. See who can borrow what they need before the money supply runs out. Well, you know, technically on a fiat system, they just print more money, but at some point they print more money like they're doing in Venezuela, where what you thought was a $100 bill is now a $10,000 bill for even less. You know, it just doesn't buy anything. This is the Weimar problem after World War One, and that's the reason that gold bugs have heyday when we have a lot of government borrowing going on. The problem here is that we are not, as a general rule, most people who are investing are not prepared to handle this kind of change, because modern portfolio theory says, oh, not again. Let's just go back to sleep. It'll work its way out because the market always goes up. And yet you don't really want to have your account go down another 54% like it did in 08 and 09 and wait 7 years to get even. But with the standard balanced portfolio, and the reason this comes to mind is I had an online meeting with people this week who have their money under management with a firm over in Bellevue, and that's exactly what they're doing. 60-40 stocks and bonds. And yeah, don't worry, market always goes up. Just look at the chart on the wall here. See, you know, that's how it works. Well, so I showed them the last 20 years. And if you attend our next webinar, I'll do that again. You can look at the last 20 years. It doesn't look anything like the chart on the wall. The reality is life is hard. Markets are hard. And somebody's got to pay attention, not just put it on autopilot and assume that there's no storm in your future.
Not unless you've got, you know, 100 years to sit back and just wait and not care about the interim, which is no one I know. So you can't, when things change as much as they're changing right now, your portfolio's got to reflect what's going on. Just like value investors are having so much trouble right now, it's not that value's out of favor, it's that value's not working at all. It cannot be successful right now. And it really doesn't matter why. It just matters that, you know what, that process is not working, and you need to take note of that and adjust your portfolio accordingly. And if you've got hand of that pie chart, nothing's going to change. You're going to stay in that 60-40 portfolio, and it's just going to stay there unless you go in and ask for something different. And you shouldn't be having to make that decision. That you're paying for financial advice. You're paying for someone to run a portfolio for you, not ask you what you think you should be doing. That's not the way it should work, but that's the way it is when they hand you the pie chart.
If you want to understand a simplified explanation of this particular issue, log on to our website, go to the video tab, and re-watch the first 28 minutes of the September webinar. We really spent some time clarifying what the problems are and the underlying assumptions of modern portfolio theory and today's market. And a big portion of that, and the problem that value investors have, is that traditionally there's been a correlation between interest rates, dividends, and stock prices. And that correlation has been blown out of the academic world with all of the quantitative easing that the Fed has done, and now Congress participating by borrowing money out the wazoo and trying to figure out how to get it. Of course, they're a little stumbling block with the election in the way. But as soon as the election's over, there's going to be more money coming out of Congress. We look at interest rates. We basically had three types of environments in this last century. One, prior to the end of World War II, interest rates kind of fluctuated up and down a little bit, but they never really went very far. And then the baby boomers became adults and families started, and they're we had lots of demand and lots of shortages for the stuff that boomers wanted as they started their families. And interest rates and inflation all took, well, inflation took off because of shortages, and then we got inflation adjust to that. And then Paul Volcker in 79 says, enough and enough. We're going to change the way this works. We're going to break the back of inflation. And he did. So the third phase of interest rates is they collapsed from 16% back in the early 80s for a 10-year yield to get 16%. I remember clients buying 10-year certificates of deposit, FDIC insured at 12% per year for 10 years. If you could only get that today, right?
I'll never forget Warren Buffett borrowed billions of dollars to buy fixed income at the time. And people were like, what are you, crazy? You're borrowing money to buy bonds? And of course, Buffett was just grinning and saying, yeah, you're locking in, you know, 10, 11, 12%. Yeah, that's fine with me. I'll borrow a little money on that.
So here we are at the end of the first phase ended shortly after World War II, and then the next phase ended in 79-80, and here we are now at zero interest for your savings. Well, you get 0.75% if you're willing to commit for 10 years. 0.75% for a 10-year commitment. You said, that doesn't sound like a deal, does it?
That's not real great, no.
So that destroys the normal financial formula process for the value investor. And it makes trying to figure out what's going on with stocks difficult. But here's the next problem that I believe the problem from a financial collapse problem is coming from. And that is we're going to end up with we are ending up with a lot of debt, and probably a lot more before we get done with the cycle. And then inflation comes back, and that may be 2 or 3 years downstream before we really see it. I mean, the Fed's been trying to create inflation since 2009, and they don't know how to do it. They don't have the tools because they can't change your behavior.
And they've been doing things that many people in watching the financial world have said this is going to cause runaway inflation for sure. Here we go. That's since 2008. You know, with all the stimulus, all the money coming into the economy, it's going to cause massive inflation. Haven't seen any yet. So it's, again, we're in a little different territory here.
But the screw does turn, and I think 2-3 years out, it's finally going to start showing up. Now, when that does, the normal process of the markets is for interest rates to rise. Well, the debt that the Fed has and all these other countries have begins to mature, and it rolls over at a higher rate. Now what do? You can afford to pay all this on a cheap mortgage. But this is kind of like a HELOC, a home equity line of credit. It's an adjustable rate. So as long as rates are going down, everybody's got a smile on their face saying, hey, this is fun. Maybe I'll just borrow some more money. My payment doesn't go up. What's the big deal? Until the interest rate starts to rise. And then, this is getting hard to make the payments on.
And then that tends to continue. Yeah, it starts to ratchet up, and it's going to keep ratcheting up for a while. And so it's going to get worse before it gets better once that begins.
So we end up with rising interest rates, federal government, And we're not alone. Governments start having to raise more money just to pay the interest on the debt. But the Fed's going to try and keep interest rates down. I don't know how they suppress interest rates when the market is forcing them up. I mean, this is going to be a real battle between government and the market. And then with rising inflation, your cost of living is going up. And you may not know that Social Security's COLAs have always been inadequate. They don't keep up with the real cost of living. The Social Security Administration has figured out that there are some other ways to calculate inflation for benefit adjustments that don't rise as rapidly. And they're in the process of making changes so your Social Security even keeps up less efficiently.
So it's a benefit adjustment, but you have to figure out who the benefit's for. And it's for Social Security Department, not for you.
Yeah, well, we're talking about government debt. There's also a ton of corporate debt.
Yes.
With interest rates as low as they have been, anybody who still had a credit rating went out and borrowed money because sales collapsed and they needed money just to keep paying bills so they could stay operational. Even if it's operational, losing more money, it's what's called burning cash.
And they're good at that. They're very good at burning cash. They can spend an increasing supply of money. And when money gets this inexpensive, a lot of corporations look out there and they say, hey, it'd be irresponsible not to borrow money at this rate. We need to go out and get this cash. So they're out there doing it, and they're rolling it up. Let's talk more about that, Don, after the break. We're right here at the bottom of the hour. If you are not getting our Week in Review, we have a weekly email newsletter that goes out that's a real good review of things that have happened this week. It's very current and gives you an idea about what things are important and what things, you know, they maybe make it a big hullabaloo about, but might not be something you need to lose any sleep over. If you'd like to begin getting that, you just need to send us an email. Send it to help@iriradio.com. That's help@iriradio.com. And just put Week in Review in the subject line, and then we need your first and last name. And that's it. We'll get you signed up, and you will start receiving the Week in Review on Monday. That's another thing that we're getting very, very positive reviews on. So it's a good little piece, and if you ever don't want it, you can unsubscribe, and it will go away completely. If you have questions for us here this morning, feel free to give us a call, 888-312-5757. That is 888-312-5757. You are listening to Investor Resources here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I beg your pardon. I never promised you a rose garden along with the sunshine. There's gotta be a little rain sometime.
Well, that's true. Whether you don't want to live in a rainforest, you don't want to live in the desert, we need somewhere in between, and that's kind of the Puget Sound area. Loving it here. There are days, not so much. But same way in the market, there are days, not so much. But one of the things that has happened with low interest rates is, and the shutdown has been businesses collapsed, and companies have gone out and borrowed tons and tons of money. I'm looking at Delta reported this last quarter three, that their passenger revenue collapsed 83%. Ouch.
That hurts.
It's burning through $18 million a day. That's about a little over $1 billion a month. And they have $21 billion cash on hand. So unless Congress passes a bill that gives the airlines more money, and it's not just Delta, but United is going through almost $20 billion a month. And excuse me, they're going through 19 a day. I've got my numbers. It's $25 million a month. And that's down from 40 that they were burning beforehand. I don't know what their reserves are, but the airlines are in trouble. So presumably Congress is going to come up with some money for them. And it makes the $45 billion that airlines spent buying back their stock the last couple of years pretty wasted.
Absolutely.
I mean, they did exactly the opposite of what a CFO is supposed to do, which is to buy the stock when it's cheap and sell it when it's high. And they did it the opposite way. And now they can't sell it to raise cash. That's the purpose of corporate stock ownership. Well, it's one of the purposes. Anyway, a lot of these companies that have borrowed a lot of money, some of it in junk quality, and people have been buying it because the interest rates have been high, and they have been ignoring the fact that these companies are on the verge of bankruptcy. And if the government doesn't bail them out, that high interest rate bond's not going to be worth much.
It is not. And especially with like airlines, that's one of those situations where a government bailout is definitely just a short-term fix. And because a return to the same level of people flying, which is, of course, the bread and butter of what airlines need. You know, we talk about passenger revenue. That's their revenue. So if nobody's flying, they're in big trouble. And that's going to change the nature of that business. And that's going to have to be reflected in how many of them are out there, how many seats are flying. And the government's not going to be able to change that long term.
No. Now we have Michael from Seattle on the line. Welcome, Michael. You are on the air.
Thank you. I have a question for beginning investing. Suppose the beginning investor is going to invest for the long term and he buys some stock. Should he leave it with a brokerage? Like, I was worried that the brokerage might go bankrupt. And then I wondered, well, do I lose my investments if the broker goes bankrupt? Or should I take delivery of my stock when I buy it?
I don't think you can take delivery anymore. It's really hard to find a certificate. And your fear is generally unfounded because all of the brokers are required to participate in SIPC. That's the Securities Investor Protection Corporation. It's a corollary to the banking FDIC. And every major bank carries additional insurance on top of SIPC limits to guarantee that in their event of default and they don't get merged out to somebody, which is usually what happens, is the SEC steps in and says, you're in financial trouble. You are now going to be part of this other brokerage firm over here. And over the weekend, your accounts are transferred and you get a notice on Monday morning that your account number is unchanged, but you now contact it through this new website that because they've taken over the firm. But your securities position is not altered in that process. So don't.
The stocks you buy are still safe. Yeah, if the brokerage goes under, you still own the stock. So that it's not contingent on that business staying in business. Someone else will pick it up, and you'll get reporting from someone else. But like Don just said, your investment will stay with whoever it was placed with.
That was a good question, Michael.
Good to know.
Sure.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. And that frees up a line, but and the numbers 888-312-5757. But we have Liam from Everett on the line. Liam, you are live on KVI.
Thank you. Have you ever heard of the book Web of Debt?
Web of Debt? I have not, no.
Well, it's just the way it used to work. Countries used to print their own money. Each country had its own money that they needed. They'd print it. But then somebody decided they were going to store the gold to protect it in the country, and whoever stored the gold had to guard. They guarded the gold, and then they got the idea, look, if we've got the gold, then they pay us to guard it. Then, of course, if we got the gold, we can charge what we want. Because if they don't give us the gold, so now, instead of the countries printing their own money, the international bankers, they charge us. This is where we're at. There's not enough money. When it runs out, this is where revolution is not less. There's not enough money to go around. But they hold you hostage. You have to borrow it.
Thank you, Liam, that's an interesting theory, but the fact is gold is not a currency, and it is not used to back anybody's currency anymore. It is all fiat currency. Every country can print their own money. Now, as far as charging for storage of gold, I think they call that Fort Knox. And I'm sure we do charge other countries for the deposits that we keep safe on the military base. But the fact is, all currency today is just printed money. There is no gold backing currency. So I'm sure it's an interesting book and would have been really appropriate when we had a gold standard back in the 70s, but President Nixon did away with that. And there is an argument that if he had not done away with that, gold was required for currency, we would not have the growth in the economy anywhere in the world because we would not have had the ability to finance it. So that's a good point. It's an interesting academic debate, but having abandoned gold as a backing for any currency, it is purely academic. The problems, however, for not having currency backed by anything that limits the ability of a government to finance its way out of a problem, it creates other problems. This is the unintended consequences rule. So, I mean, Liam raises a good point, but right now it's one for the academics and the companies that sell gold to market the fear of this collapse. Actually, I don't know that we're going to, what kind of global collapse we would have other than from the World Bank. They're telling us, this is a potential problem. It may not occur, but we should be aware of it. And our governments should be aware of it. But as we said in the prior segment, they're all looking out for, I'm looking out for me, fella. I mean, you look out for yourself.
And you never really know where that stuff pops up. You never know, hey, is gold going to be, is that going to be the savior? Should we all own a bunch of gold right now? We own gold in the portfolio when it makes sense to own gold, when it's going up. Right now, it's just kind of treading water, and we don't own any right now. So gold is not a panacea that's going to fix your portfolio long-term no matter what. It's like any other asset class. There are great times to own it and not so great times to own it, and you need to pay attention to that.
So just like the theory of gold versus fiat currency, economists have a story to tell, and they're storytellers. And if you're listening to somebody who has a Nobel for something about economic science, don't let it fool you. Models of economic theory require some suspension of disbelief. I mean, just take a look at trying to figure out, let's go back to Bernanke or Greenspan. And Greenspan.
There we go.
And Bernanke did a pretty good job. He tried to be a little clearer on it. Now we have Powell, who gets up and talks about all these issues that they are dealing with, but he never talks about concrete numbers. It's always conceptual. He's telling a story. And a story is not what you need when you're trying to figure out, how on earth am I going to afford retirement?
especially if you're looking for any concrete evidence. And that's the part that's missing from all of economics. And that's the way it's always been. Economists like to get you to think that this is real hard science. If you push lever A, B happens every time. Economics don't work that way. There are too many other inputs, too many other things that influence it. And, the worst thing is us, people that influence it. And that's why things can get off the rails, disconnect so far from an academic theory, which mathematically may work just fine. But that doesn't mean it's going to work in the real world.
So economics kind of started in the late 1800s. And ever since then, economists have sought to make their discipline appear to be scientific. But in economics, you can't add 1 + 1 and get 2. Maybe they're the ones that came up with modern math.
I'm sure they were definitely involved in it. But one hard science we do have, Don, is time. And we're up against our last break of the morning. It comes around the same time every day. It's amazing. Yeah, there's something you can hang your hat on. The sun is still working, so time is still there. We're going to have to get out of here for a break. I'd like to remind you that we do have our next webinar on the books for our next market update for Saturday, November 7th, 9:15, right after the show. You can register for that at iriradio.com. Just go to iriradio.com, head to the webinar page, a couple of clicks, and you will be signed up. And then after the show on November 7th, you just click that link and you will be online with us and you'll be able to see our screens. We can show you what we're thinking about, show you what we're talking about, and hopefully give you a little more clarity into what's going on in the market out there. We do have one full segment left, plenty of time to get your questions on the board. Give us a call, 888-312-5757. That is 888-312-5757. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
was just reflecting on Liam's call about gold.
Yes.
And I'm sure we charge other countries for all the gold that we store on their behalf in Fort Knox. But wasn't it Goldfinger, that the movie about breaking into Fort Knox to steal all the gold?
Correct. Well, no, he wasn't going to steal all the gold. He was just going to irradiate it all, I think, and make it so no one could use it. So his gold was going to be the only gold left.
That's right. That's right. But
wait a minute. Why wouldn't that work again? Is that
Well, one of the things that I was, in fact, I was on a break. You can think about a lot of things because you're not talking to myself. On the airlines, you know, they had to go borrow money, and Delta's out looking for money. All the airlines are, so they're not an exception. And I said, what can we do to raise money? Well, a lot of them actually sold their airplanes for cash, and then they leased them back. That's okay. Sale lease back happens in real estate a lot.
Sure.
So they raised some money, and now what they've done is they've actually increased their debt because they have to make this monthly payment on something that they already owned. But the other thing that they found that they could hawk to raise money was the frequent flyer miles. Did you know that frequent flyer miles are worth a lot of money to other marketing entities? So with Delta, for instance, if you have a SkyMiles account, you're a frequent flyer. United Airlines has theirs. I forget what they, but anyway, they all have some sort of frequent flyer deal. And Delta's the SkyMiles. Well, they have a credit card relationship with American Express. So if you have a SkyMiles account, frequent flyer, you, as a frequent flyer, are considered to be higher income, high quality credit probability. You undoubtedly get periodic solicitations from American Express as a sign up for this Delta credit card and get some free bonus of some sort. And well, they borrowed a ton of money with your frequent flyer miles. You are a valuable asset for a lot of marketing companies who view those people who have frequent flyer accounts as high quality credit risk. One thing, we've had a couple of phone calls. I did, Perry. I don't know, we didn't talk about this, whether or not you did or not, but I had a number of calls this week from people who were saying, what are you going to do with the election? What are you going to do if Biden wins? What are you going to do if Trump wins? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? What are you going to do to protect my accounts because the market's going to crash? Well, you know, we never build a portfolio based on what we think should happen because we don't know how to forecast tomorrow, much less a couple of weeks from now.
True enough.
So we are trend followers. And when things change, we change. We have a quote, and I can't even remember who's the guy that says, when the facts change, I change my mind. And that's basically the way we run portfolios. When the facts change, we change our mind. What do? Do you just sit there? Oh, that's modern portfolio theory. Facts change, but it doesn't matter because eventually they'll change back. Maybe 16, 17 years from now, but don't worry. I mean, you have long enough. How old are you? Oh, no, that doesn't matter anymore. How we control risk, not we, how the market, how the industry controls risk is with modern portfolio theory is the more conservative you say you are, the less they put in stocks. That's just it. We give you more bonds. The fact that bonds are at next to zero interest rate, and you're assuming that they're going to average, because the long-term average on bonds is about 5.5%, you're assuming you'll get a 5.5% return on your bonds because that's what the model says. But reality is one. Maybe one and a half.
So even if you are not assuming that, even if you think bond revenues, interest rates are going to remain low for the foreseeable future, the allocation software that they use to produce that pie chart, it's still assuming that there's going to be that long-term average dialed in there. So you're looking at 5% return. You're just not going to see that. So there's a huge disconnect between reality and what's going to end up in your portfolio, and it's just not going to work out in your favor. And there's nothing you can do about that if you're using a firm who uses modern portfolio theory, who puts you in that pie chart and then leaves you there once you fill out your risk return questionnaire. That's not going to work out long term. We know that right now looking at it, and so do they. But they don't have a mechanism to change it. They're just going to leave you there.
And the fact you do, too, when you stop to think about it, because what do you think is going to happen to interest rates in the rest of your lifetime? Are they going to go substantially lower, which is the assumption, or are they likely to begin rising at some point in time while you're still alive? Because that's the only time period that matters, is while you're still alive. And if interest rates are rising, then all that extra money you put in bonds are going to be losing money, because that's the way finance works with bonds. Rising interest rates, losing value. Falling interest rates, rising value. It's a teeter-totter, and you can't change math. Well, I understand if you go to school now they do, but
you can massage it, but you can't change it. It's not going to work out in your favor. And when you are banking on part of your portfolio returning 5% over long periods of time, compounding into the future, and you're getting one or less, that's a huge hole in your revenue stream if you're using that for spending. It's a huge hole in your wealth building if you're using that to accumulate wealth for anything, and you need to be able to account for that. That's why right now we have no bonds in any of our portfolios. It doesn't matter how old you are. Your age has nothing to do with whether or not you should have a lot of bonds or not. Are the bonds a good idea or not? Are they good if you're young? Are they good if you're old? Doesn't make any difference. Are they good or not? And right now, it's not a great place to have money.
So our issue generally is that market determines risk. If the market's high risk, doesn't matter how old you are, you should minimize or eliminate your exposure. If it's low risk, as much as your gut is turning and saying, I don't want to do this because it's at the bottom of a big drop, that's where things are cheap and where risk is small. That's when you have to make a decision to actually put your money back to work. And you need a process to do that. And the standard pie chart process just kind of ignores it and says, well, you don't like where you are? Well, let's go through these questions again and see if you want to change your risk profile, in which case we will then change your portfolio. I mean,
wait 50 years for it to work out in your favor. So it's a long, long time before that change is gonna reap any benefits for you.
Well, one of the things that has changed is the assumption that companies that are on the verge of bankruptcy should be avoided, because that has not been the case this year.
Not a bit.
There has been a ton of new money coming into the market. A lot of this has been the Robin Hood apps and other phone apps have attracted investors with small amounts of money, generally not particularly knowledgeable about markets, but they don't have a lot of money, they're looking for a cheap stock. Well, the cheap stocks happen to be ones often that are not doing well financially, and this has been a phenomenal year to make big bets on bankrupt companies. They may not have filed yet, but boy, they're close. That's okay. This is what's called speculation. This is not investing. Investing takes some process and decision making to be able to justify what you have in your portfolio. How did you buy it? And when you bought it, do you know exactly where it is going to go that will force you to say, that was a bad decision, I'm going to walk away from it? You know, Perry, you and I've said this before often on the radio. I mean, we both have very long-term marriages and families, and we're married and committed to our spouses. But the stuff in our portfolio, not so much.
That's right. I just read later this week. They said never look at your stock portfolio like a tattoo. It's not something you keep forever. You know, you need to be able to change that at a moment's notice, and that's the way we see it.
So it's just a function of what is your process. And modern portfolio theory is not really a process. It is, well, let's figure out how much we're going to put in certain types of stocks and how much in bonds, maybe a little real estate. Yeah, I might squeeze in a commodity once in a while. And then we set it on autopilot, and every quarter we just check to see if we need to rebalance the portfolio. And that may not be the case. So It sounds like, Mike, you got to talk to me in my ear. That sounded like he's getting ready to kick us off the air.
Yeah, well, we're down to, you know, we're down to a minute and a half or so. But that was just a little, the disclaimer at the end of the show is running during the show. So a little yeah. computer glitch back there. It's not, well, that's not Mike. So,
okay, well, we are out of time here. If you want to talk to us during the week, the number is 800-317-9119, 800-317-9119. Register for the next webinar at irradio.com. That's irradio.com. And we are out of time. Lord willing, we will be back next week. You have a great, safe weekend.